Super awkward fun cast. You're listening to the super awkward fun cast. Yeah.
Hello. Welcome to the new episode of the Super Awkward Fun Cast. I know you already heard my rendition of the theme, but I'm going to give you a bit more. I'm going to see if I can come up with an improvised a cappella version. Hold on.
Super awkward fun cast. You're listening to the super awkward fun cast. Yeah,
there it is. hope you enjoyed that. I did. That's all that matters. So there's a lot to talk about today. Just to let you know, this is an early episode. I am putting this out on Tuesday on the 19th. When I will be headed out for my first ever really long vacation, which is much needed after the year that I've had so far, and last year, all of it, but to Europe. So I'm going to Europe, and I hope this isn't the last podcast. That's all I'm saying. No, I mean, you see all this shit happening in the sky with the fucking planes falling apart. It does make you wonder, you know? And yeah, a lot of it is Boeing and all. And a lot of it is being perpetuated by the media as, oh, look at this, look at that, look at this, look at that. And it's all showing one thing, kind of like what happened with the derailments and everything with the trains. So I am aware that there's a lot of propaganda happening right now, but I am hopeful that everything goes off without a hitch. I've been very stressed about it and scared because it would be the longest flight I've ever had, 10 plus hours. So it's going to be crazy, but I am ready for that journey to begin. Should I do all of this in an accent? Some of you like my accent, so that might be fun for you. I don't know about the rest, but it would be a good practice because I do want to pretend to be British or English in France and in Italy because, you know, US people don't really have a great reputation there, is all I'm saying. But yeah, I can do this all night. but anyway, yeah, I'm literally at the airport right now, probably posting this. Or I posted it before I got to the airport. But yeah, maybe I listen to this on the plane, on my computer. But yes. While I'm in this accent, I will go to one of the top stories of the night. I've been watching, like, old episodes, literally, like, the first episodes of Saturday Night Live, or Saturday Night, as it started. And Chevy Chase has done all the weekend updates until now. I mean, now he's gotten hurt, and now Jane Curtin is filling in at the moment. Early season 2, because he had a pratfall that didn't go well. Okay, the top story tonight is, we haven't done an update on things in a while, so let's get some of the housekeeping out of the way and see how things are going with certain stories that we've covered in the past. So, like, for example, Ghislaine Maxwell, let's see what's happening with her. From The Independent, Ghislaine Maxwell case back in court as she appeals 2021 sex trafficking conviction. From The Independent, Mike Bedigan, 3 days ago, as of this recording, Maxwell, 62, was sentenced to 20 years behind bars last year after being found guilty of 5 counts of trafficking and abusing young girls over decades. Oh, get rid of that pop-up. Gillian Maxwell should have been protected by immunity provisions from a previous non-prosecution agreement in Florida, her attorneys have argued. The disgraced British socialite, 62, returned to the spotlight this week as lawyers launched an appeal over her 2021 sex trafficking conviction. During an appeal hearing in New York federal court on Tuesday, Diana Fabi Sampson, representing Maxwell, referenced the 2008 non-prosecution agreement, the sweetheart deal, made by state prosecutors with late pedophile, Jeffrey Epstein in Florida. Ms. Sampson said not honoring the terms of the agreement would strike a dagger in the heart of the trust between the government and its citizens, because we have so much trust between those two things, right? So much of it. In the end, Miss Maxwell was prosecuted for crimes that she, as a third-party beneficiary to the plea agreement in Florida, should not have been prosecuted, Miss Sampson said. Funny this is bringing this up now, so late in the game. Very funny. Maxwell's attorneys had previously argued that a juror failed to disclose that they were a sexual abuse victim. Now we're getting this story, I suppose. It was a 2021 interview journalist Lucia Osborne Crowley conducted with the juror Scotty David, published in The Independent in the weeks following the Maxwell sex trafficking verdict that led her legal team to appeal on this matter. One of Maxwell's attorneys, Arthur Adala, addressed the issue of an impartial juror outside court, saying that the failure of Mr. David to disclose he had been the victim of sexual assault was wrong and that the juror had totally misrepresented the truth. That is absolutely verboten. It's wrong. And although the judge had a hearing and he acknowledged he wasn't accurate at all, she said, "Well, I think he made an honest mistake by not checking off that box, so I'm going to let the verdict stand," he said. Mr. Adela, whatever, said the case should be dismissed, adding, "If we allow the government to make deals with the citizens with us, and then they decide, for whatever reason, they're going to rip up that room and rip up that deal, that handshake means nothing. Come on, think of the government and the citizens, you know, who are, you know, accused of sexual abuse of children. Think of them. What about them and their non-prosecution agreements? What is it for? What are these sweetheart deals for, if not to exonerate the citizens who are accused?" Maxwell was not present in the courtroom for Tuesday's hearing, but was reportedly listening remotely from her jail cell in Florida. She was convicted in 2021 of 5 counts of trafficking and abusing young girls over decades with Epstein. She was sentenced to 20 years behind bars in June 2022. And that's the update. So, good to know. And there's also, like, her, you know, enjoying herself at the jail and having a grand old time, you know. So much fun. Okay, let's see. I forgot what I was looking for here. Oh, yes, now I remember. I could just look this up. That would be so much easier. Okay. Oh. In other news, there is a TikTok ban in the works from the House, but the House is not in charge of everything, so we'll see how that goes. The Senate will have to decide on the bill, and it's all related to China. You know, China, big bad China, blah, blah, blah. I have no segue to TikTok. I'm sorry about that. I hate the word TikTok, the words TikTok, because it always makes me feel, makes me think of that song by Kesha, which I loathed at the time. Just hated that song with a passion. Hated every moment of it. Oh my goodness. And now it's a thing. And now it's an app. And now, like, it's pervasive. It's everywhere. And you know what? Yes, we could single out that app, or we could talk about Meta and all the issues there with Zuckerberg and all of his governmental liaisons, you know, in terms of censorship and, you know, the other things that they do, with, like, influencing certain events and whatnot, and, oh yeah, all the shooters that have used that platform, you know. But yeah, let's really single out the Chinese owned network that's literally doing the same thing as everyone else in different ways. But all, you know, for a certain not so great reason to benefit the government ultimately. So it's kind of funny that the government is getting involved in this way, in my opinion. But hey, enough of my opinion. Let's hear some stuff from CNBC. Why not? Let's see what Faber thinks. I don't know who this Faber person is. Let me see if there's anything about him here. He reports on the likelihood of this TikTok ban in the US. Okay, let's see if it's likely, according to this man who's on the news. This is from one day ago. That's literally the name of the video. Faber report, likelihood of total TikTok ban. TikTok. I want to say TikTok because I can abide that. I can't abide TikTok, but okay. TikTok. Here we go.
All right, guys, I've been following, you know, Sarah, you've been all over the place this week, but I know you watch. We've been following this TikTok story very closely because it is fascinating, to say the least, in terms of where things stand. And where they're going. Right now, of course, and I'm sure we'll hear over the course of perhaps the day from Emily Wilkins in D.C. in terms of where things stand in the Senate, how quickly a bill to ban TikTok in the United States there will be created. Will it be part of the appropriations bill? You know, you look for Maria Cantwell and Mark Warner from Virginia, Maria Cantwell from Washington, to play a key role here, as well as Lisa Monaco from the DOJ, I'm told. But again, I'll defer to my colleagues in D.C. for the latest there. What I can tell you, though, is that, you know, the Journal reporting today, and I've been bringing up any number of times, the likelihood that the Chinese are not going to say, okay, ByteDance, you can sell this. And you can sell it along with, by the way, the algorithm and the source code. Now, you can make your own algorithm, but you need at least some time to be able to copy the source code. And I went back 3.5 years. I found my notes finally after a bit of a search from 3.5 years ago when we were going through all this. Back then it was about 10 million lines of code. Now I'm told it could be as much as 40 million lines of code. It could take a long time to conceivably to copy that code. That said, large language models apparently make it a bit easier and more possible. But the problem here is that while Steven Mnuchin may be interested in buying it, or perhaps there'll be some others out there that certainly might be.
Oh, I didn't even get to that one. Steve Mnuchin, my favorite person from the last regime, has generously decided to maybe invest in TikTok as a brand and a social media platform. So all is well, all is well. You know, the guy who also was an executive producer on a lot of movies in Hollywood that are very well received and very well liked, and I would say loved in so many ways. Yeah, he was very instrumental in Hollywood in that way, and it looks like he's getting back into producing, or, you know, investing in companies and stuff. So here we go.
You're not gonna get a chance at this point to actually do so. And so we are left with the real possibility that if the Senate acts and passes the bill, and President Biden, as he said he would, signs it, and then there's some time period and there potentially is litigation nonetheless, that this actually could disappear in the United States, as hard as it seems to imagine, because what you're buying without the source code or access to the source code is virtually impossible. Obviously, you'd like the algorithm as well. Steven Mnuchin addressed this on Squawk Box yesterday when he was asked about, well, what do you do if you don't actually get the technology? Take a listen.
Proposals they've blocked because they were not happy about the technology transfer. And I would have to convince them and the U.S. government that there was a way to do this.
And that continues to be a key question. You know, there's been some talk about Bobby Kotick as well, the former, of course, CEO of Activision being involved. You know, I think the sense, frankly, that I'm hearing is, sure, there was something to do. He was involved the last time, 3.5 years ago, along with Oracle, along with Walmart, along with Microsoft, when they all sort of were thinking about what they could do here as a block, as a ban seemed potentially possible when we got that executive order from then President Trump to ban it. Not right now. I mean, there's nothing seemingly, you know, Mnuchin may be out there and may be able to raise some money around it, but you got to actually have a deal that you can do. And so we'll keep a close eye on the Senate and how quickly this bill moves.
For sure. And, you know, it's so interesting because I can't get away from the idea that this is all happening at a moment, arguably, when TikTok's financial growth rate and kind of cultural sway might be peaking. And this is the way these things tend to go.
Of course, you know, 170 million users here in the U.S., still not profitable. Again, I've talked to any number of people now who say because they're spending so much money on Project Texas, which has been all about moving all the data to the Oracle servers in Texas, that costs a lot of money. That said, there's a belief that the Chinese were to allow the technology transfer, but they could be worth $100 billion. I mean, you're talking about something that could be generating just from an ad business at least $5 billion in operating income, let's call it, over 5 years from now. Put a multiple on that and figure it out. ByteDance itself, though, extremely valuable regardless. And there doesn't seem to be quite as much pushback this time from some of the owners of ByteDance around all this because they have such dominance, not dominance, but such a significant position in the Chinese market that's added so much value overall. And by the way, remember last time there was a ban, there was a talk, it was Australia, U.S., New Zealand, U.K., it was all the English sort of speaking TikTok that would have been involved. That doesn't appear to be the case so far this time.
There's also the users and the influencers who make a lot of money and the celebrities and and TikTok is waging a pretty active campaign getting them to call their senators right now and lobby against this. And I do wonder if we're going to continue to hear political opposition on things like First Amendment really heat up.
And of course, finally, the big beneficiary, if this were to happen, would have to be Meta.
Oh, yeah.
Without
a
doubt.
That's what President Trump says.
That's what President Trump says. And that seems to be
I mean, vertical short video. They created Reels just for that. So.
You know, the chief of staff of the president, Jeff Zients, was a board member of Meta's. Just saying.
Real. Well, it'd be like that sometimes. I did not expect to go back to that accent, my original one, but that happened. Moving on. There was a press briefing yesterday that I have missed. I'm just doing it on purpose now. There was a press briefing that I missed yesterday, so I guess we should get to that. I'm sure TikTok is one of the big topics.
Issues of commercial spying.
Oh dear, here we go.
Expedite the grown deeper and stronger over the years. We look forward to continuing to build a vibrant future for U.S.-Irish relations, which is something that you all know is very important to President Biden, who is a proud descendant of the Blewitts, of County Mayo and the Finnegans of County Louth. Sunday marks St. Patrick's Day and also my mom's birthday.
Bitch!
Thank you so much.
My mother's birthday is on the 18th. So? Who gives a shit? I don't care.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Happy birthday, Mom. And the president will deliver remarks at a celebration here at the White House as part of our annual tradition. And now, if you give me another moment. point here. I also want to address a heartbreaking development in the tragic loss of Next Benedict. For parents across the country, and I know for many of you here and some of you watching, many of you watching, including myself, the cause of Next...
No offense, I'm just going to skip. Because, as it turns out, that person killed themselves. And there was a lot of background on that that I don't really care to get into. It's not a top story for me, personally, on my show, so I'm going to move on.
The HNP's capabilities, that's the Haitian National Police, National Security...
She's having a lot of trouble today.
Advisor Jake Sullivan spoke today to his Kenyan counterpart, Monica Juma, reaffirming a shared commitment to supporting the Haitian people and expediting the multinational security support mission to assist to the HNP.
We have, you know, more regime change, nothing to worry about.
Surge law enforcement resources to counter firearms trafficking, and the Justice Department has prosecuted those responsible for smuggling firearms into Haiti. On the political front, Haitians from across the political spectrum and segments of Haiti society, including religious leaders, business leaders, and civil society, made tough compromises, which resulted in a Haitian-driven declaration released by CARICOM just this week. That declaration outlined the contours of an inclusive, broad, transitional presidential council. The TPC will name an independent permanent election council, which was dissolved in 2021. We applaud Haitians for creating a roadmap to establish a new permanent electoral council to support free and fair elections and strengthen its democratic institution. A lot of work ahead lies ahead, and the...
Dear, she's turning into Biden. But I was thinking while she was saying that, whom better to secure elections than this wonderful country? The US, the United States of America. Whom better?
And the United States remains committed to supporting the people of Haiti on the humanitarian and security and political fronts. With that, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Admiral John Kirby, who's going to talk about...
Finally, she gets a break and she doesn't have to talk anymore.
...about Russia and Iran.
Thank you, Ukraine. Oh, wow. We're getting Russia and Iran today. Lovely.
As y'all know, we have expressed serious concerns from this podium that Russia is seeking to acquire close-range ballistic missiles from Iran to enable its brutal war in Ukraine.
So give us money. Give us money, Congress, please. That's what he's saying.
And that Russian negotiations to acquire those close-range ballistic missiles have been active and they've been advancing. Today, I just want to call your attention to a joint statement released this morning by the United States and other G7 countries, warning Iran not to go forward with the sale of close-range ballistic missiles to Russia. The G7 statement reads in part, and I quote, "Were Iran to proceed with providing ballistic missiles or related technology to Russia, we are prepared to respond swiftly and in a coordinated manner, including with new and significant measures against Iran," end quote. So we're speaking with one voice here on this matter, from the United States, Canada, Japan, the EU, France, Germany, and the United Kingdom.
Sorry for the background noise of the doors closing constantly. I am trying to be calm. I'm calm. We're going to let it slide. I'm going to move on with our lives. Let's go.
Kingdom. Now, shifting gears, next week, the United States will be sending a high-level delegation to the Summit of Democracy that will be led by Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The U.S. delegation will also include senior U.S. government officials from the NSC, from USAID, and, of course, from the State Department. At the summit, being hosted by the Republic of Korea, we're very grateful for their leadership in that regard. The U.S. will host a high-level event on the misuse of commercial spyware. And this is a significant...
Oh, my fucking goodness. I just, you know, I almost feel like you hear more from my new mic than you did from the old one, because I don't know. I'm trying here. But it can be distracting, and I'm trying not to be distracted, but it's very distracting. And I hope you can't hear it as loud as I can, but I fear you can, because I have edited one of these.
Significant priority for the Biden-Harris administration. Our event will, for the first time, convene some of the most senior government officials around the world, with those from civil society, from the private sector, and even from those who have been directly affected by the nefarious effects of commercial spyware. We're looking forward to the conversations at the summit and to continuing the important work of strengthening democracy.
It's like they hate me. It's like my neighbors hate me and they want to hurt me, to annoy me to such a degree. But they don't even know what's happening. So I'm trying to be cool. I'm a cool cucumber. I'm a cool cucumber. I thought that was going to be more of a tongue twister, but I guess it wasn't.
Democratic resilience worldwide.
Thanks. John, can you say anything more specifically on what possible sanctions would be levied? I'd heard maybe they were mulling flights. I don't know if they're any flights. I know you're going to say no, but just if you can.
No. No, I'm not. I mean, you know, we don't preview sanctions, Colleen, but clearly we're looking at a range of options here, and without question, additional sanctions would be on the table of those options.
What stopped Iran from going forward with ballistic missile sales to Russia already? Why the delay? What's happening?
Well, I can't speak for the mullahs. I wouldn't do that, or for the Supreme Leader. We know they provided drones, not only drones, the drones themselves, but the ability to manufacture drones organically inside Russia.
Let's give it another go. Let's just wait for them to finish opening and closing a door. It's so important that they do that over and over again. Right? Very important. Let's move on.
And this is a burgeoning defense relationship that we've been watching very, very closely. We've talked about it many times here. We haven't seen them move forward other than the negotiation process actively advancing, and we really wanted to set down a marker here for Iran and for Russia, that there will be swift consequences for them to do that. What's in their calculus? I couldn't say. But this would be obviously not just really bad for the people of Ukraine, but also bad for people in the Middle East, because Iran's hoping to get something out of this too. It's not just about sales of ballistic missiles to Russia. They're hoping to get Russian military technology for themselves.
Thanks, Admiral. Does President Biden want to see new elections in Israel and for Prime Minister Netanyahu to no longer remain in power?
That's going to be up for the Israeli people to decide.
So what about beyond what he said in the Oval Office, did the President find good about Senator Schumer's speech?
Well, the President spoke about the passion with which Leader Schumer made that speech. And the President said that he knows that those remarks, they resonate with many Americans out there. For our part, we're going to keep supporting Israel in their fight against Hamas. We're going to keep
doing the thing that we are criticizing. We're going to keep doing the thing that we're getting criticized for, that is contributing to the conflict in this country with another country who's been occupied and slaughtered on a daily basis. We're going to keep doing that. Sorry. That's what we're doing.
Keep urging them to reduce civilian casualties, and we're going to keep working to get
the temporary... Reduce the civilian casualties. We have too many. It's too many. Reduce them a little bit. You know, be a little bit like the US, who's always constantly reducing casualties of civilians in the Middle East. They're constantly doing that.
Temporary ceasefire in place so we can get the hostages back home with their families and more additional aid.
The Netanyahu government says it has approved an operation, military as well as evacuating of civilians for Rafah. What is the administration's expectation about knowing what's in that plan? What comes next? What do you know at this point?
We haven't seen it. We certainly would welcome the opportunity to see it. And as we've said, Kelly, we can't support a major offensive in Rafah that doesn't also include a credible, achievable, executable plan to take care and for the safety and security of the more than a million dozens that are seeking refuge in Rafah. To move in right now in a major way without a proper accounting for all those people would, as we've said, be a disaster. And so we're gonna...
Don't do it. Don't do it. Please don't do it. We'll still give you money, but please don't do it, you know? You know, it makes sense, sure. All of it makes sense to me. I'm going to try and see if there's anything about Russia anymore. Oh, wait, hold on. I think this might be important.
Couple of things for you. You just referenced the meeting in Doha. I'm sorry if I missed this, but are you confirming that the U.S. is sending a delegation to Doha for them?
We will not be participating in this particular delegate to Doha, but there is a meeting in Doha of the counterparts.
Is there a reason that a U.S. delegation is
We have been at this, MJ, literally every day. I mean, believe me, we're involved in all these conversations. The fact that we're physically not going to have a delegation there should not be taken as any kind of signal that this isn't a serious positive move forward. We think it could be.
And has the White House asked the Israeli government to see its Rafah plans?
We have...
The CC said office plans. That's funny. I guess they're going to talk about Israel a lot. They just gave a bunch of money to Russia. Well, not Russia. What the fuck? Ukraine. Because they didn't want to wait for the Congress, and they had some money in their stockpile or whatever. Stockpile, that's not the word. Their savings or whatever. I don't know. It's some stupid word. We'll get to it in a moment. Here we go.
Opportunities to get it in. I mean, well, obviously, still the Israelis opened up the 96 gate. There are other crossings into Gaza. We would like to see them open. Because trucks by the ground is the best way to do this by volume. We're working on this temporary pier that could allow for additional shipments by sea. There's just no really good port on the Gazan coast. So, I mean, whether it's a one-off or not, I don't know. But we certainly would like to see more aid get in more quickly from a variety of different ways.
Has the Biden administration asked countries like France to stop talking about sending troops to Ukraine?
No.
Why the U.S.? Any nation sending troops to Ukraine?
Those are sovereign decisions that a nation has to make. I can just speak for this sovereign nation and this commander-in-chief, and he's made it clear that we will not put U.S. boots on the ground.
Thank you, Kerry, and thank you, John. I have a question on Indo-Pacific and then Ukraine. So in Indo-Pacific, Fiji just decided to uphold the policing cooperation agreement with China. We know the Biden administration will be working with the Pacific Islands for a few years right now, but it seems that country is still cozy with China. Is the United States losing the competition over there?
We don't ask countries to choose between us and China. They gotta make their own decisions. These are sovereign decisions as well. We are deepening our partnership with Pacific Islands countries, and we're gonna continue to do that across a range of capabilities, not just military security capabilities, but each nation has to decide for itself. We are not asking people to choose between the United States and China. We have a bilateral relationship with China, which we greatly value, and as you saw in the fall when we went to San Francisco.
Regarding the allies in the Indo-Pacific, we know Japan, of course, is a trustworthy ally. But we're also seeing President Biden seems to be opposing the Japanese company Nippon Steel to purchase the U.S. steel. So if Japan is not trustworthy enough to invest in the United States, who else is?
The relationship with Japan is extraordinarily strong. It's one of the strongest alliances we have in the world. Five of our seven treaty alliances are in the Pacific. And
which is ironic, considering, you know, the history there.
That's a key one. And I think you're going to see it, you're going to see the power and the promise of that alliance in full flower here when Prime Minister Kishida comes for the state visit. There is an awful lot to talk about. President has also been clear about making sure that steel workers in this country know that he has their back, and he made his views known on this potential merger. But that doesn't take away one bit from the terrific relationship that we have now and will continue to have with Japan.
There's a Ukraine. At least 20 people were killed and dozen injured in Russian double strike on Odessa. What can the United States do to ensure Ukraine that needed air defense capabilities going forward, given right now the Congress situation?
your question should have been, what can the Congress do to ensure they can pass the supplemental bill so we can get critical air defense capabilities to Ukraine?
Thank you, Congressman.
There it is.
Vladimir Putin said that Russia is going to launch a nuclear power unit or some kind of a nuclear stuff into the space. So should the United States take it seriously as a serious threat? And are there any ways to deter Putin in space?
I haven't heard that particular comment, so I can't. I haven't heard him. I haven't heard that actually been said. But just broadly speaking, your question is, do we take it seriously? Yeah, obviously we do. I mean, the nuclear rhetoric coming out of Moscow, not just from Putin, but from Lavrov and Peskov and others, is worrisome. And you have to take it seriously with a nation with that kind of capability. I would just tell you a couple of things. One, we monitor it very, very closely. And we've seen nothing that has caused us to believe we need to change our own strategic deterrent posture.
Just a couple more. Thank you. Congress is still debating raising the cap on visas for Afghan allies, many of whom are still waiting to get into the country and waiting in pretty inhospitable places. What's the administration's position on the number of visas that the president would like included? Republicans are trying to keep it down under 4,000. And if they don't get this into the upcoming appropriations bill, is there a plan B?
I think I talked about this a little bit yesterday. We think that by end of summer, we'll probably, at the rate we're processing SIVs, we'll blow through the 7,000 we have left, and we're asking Congress for 20,000 more. And we think that that will really be able to help us get all those worthy SIV applicants safely out of Afghanistan.
How hard is the president willing to fight for that 20,000 number?
He has been clear since the beginning. We may have ended the war in Afghanistan. We never ended our commitment to our allies.
What? We ended the war in Afghanistan. Okay.
100% commitment.
Oh, it's the one war you've ended, but all right.
To doing everything he can, and the rest of the administration as well, on working with Congress to get those SIV visa allowances in place so we can get those Afghans back out of Afghanistan.
Thank you so much. A question about the Houthis. They have warned that they will expand their...
His face right there. He had such a look like, oh shit, what's happening?
...operations and start attacking the ships, taking the longer route, the one going around the Cape of Good Hope. So how serious is this threat in your view? And also how actively is Iran supporting the Houthis right now?
They're still supporting the Houthis. They're still providing our capabilities. We keep... working to degrade those capabilities, and we take those threats seriously. We have to.
Thanks, Karine. Thanks, Admiral. There's a report that Israel is exploring using an international private security contractors to try and help protect international humanitarian aid going into Gaza. Is that something that the U.S. would support?
First of all, that would be up for the Israelis to speak to about how they might want to help with the security of humanitarian assistance that comes in by sea and then further distribution inland. Again, that would be something for them. So what I can tell you is that we are already starting.
Remember how I told you in the past that NBC News is fucking up a lot with their audio and it's really overwhelming, but hopefully it's not too bad here and we can wrap this up.
The first components of this temporary period, it's called a joint logistics over the shore capability, and those are just starting to move from the East Coast over there. It's going to take some time to get in place, and while we have that time before they get to place, we are working with allies and partners, including the Israelis, about the details of how that temporary pier will be supported, how the aid that gets to the pier and gets to the people of Gaza, how that happens. All of that is still being discussed. We're not at a point where we have final answers for that.
And then just to follow up on MJ's question, you said that you would welcome the opportunity to review this, but is it your expectation that you will get that opportunity
We would welcome the opportunity to see it.
Good, Phil.
Thank you, Dr. This week, the Russian Foreign Ministry included Jeff Seldon, a VOA reporter, in its latest round of sanctions. And earlier this month, the Russian Interior Ministry issued an arrest warrant for Washington Examiner columnist Tom Rogin, who is a U.S. citizen. What's the administration's response to this effort from Moscow to intimidate and target U.S. journalists.
Sadly, it's consistent with the Kremlin approach to particularly journalists.
Oh, really? They like going after journalists, do they? Yeah. Russia's about that, you know. Speaking of which, an appeal hearing happened in February. We talked about it, for Julian Assange. Julian Assange is looking at 170 years. Basically, he's being subjected to the idea of being extradited to the US, and that's ridiculous, but that's happening. And, you know, they're not doing anything to stop it on the US government side, in fact. And also, he's looking at a very long, lengthy sentence, ridiculously long sentence of 170 plus years. So it's very hard to take them seriously when they talk about other countries and they're going after journalists for doing their work.
And the crackdown by the Kremlin on free speech, and speech, in fact, that Mr. Putin finds offensive or inimical to his own selfish interests. So it's I think, just another reminder, and I think it underscores, first of all, the danger to Americans who may be in Russia and the need not to be there, but also the real danger of an autocrat like Putin and what he's really after here.
I can't anymore, but anyway, let's move on. So I did say ABC News, so we'll do that. So this is what happened with the military aid package for Ukraine. This is what happened.
Glad you're streaming with us while we're following breaking news in the war in Ukraine. The Biden administration...
Oh, right. This is U.S. announces new $300 million military aid package for Ukraine from 4 days ago. ABC News.
Just announcing moments ago, a new $300 million military aid package will be headed to Ukraine. Our Patrick Reval is following this out of our London bureau. What more do we know, Patrick?
Hi, Kira. Yeah, I mean, just in the last half hour, National Security Director Jake Sullivan announced that the Biden administration is providing a new security package worth $300 million to Ukraine. This comes as a bit of a surprise because, obviously, more aid to Ukraine remains deadlocked in Congress, and it is still deadlocked. But basically, the White House is saying that it has found this extra money through savings from previous...
I told you, savings. Like, they're using this term. It's insane. I wish I had $300 million in savings, don't you? My goodness.
Congressional authorizations. Basically, most aid from the U.S. to Ukraine is put back into contracts with U.S. defense companies, which produce weapons to replace the weapons that the U.S. is sending to Ukraine, and basically...
It's a cyclical thing. It's very cyclical and creepy. It's the military-industrial complex. That's what it is.
Sullivan said that the money has been found. It's been found that while negotiating these contracts, they came in under cost, and they found this extra $300 million that will go to air defense and artillery ammunition mainly. But as he also noted, this is really just a drop in the bucket because the Biden administration right now is trying to get $60 billion worth of aid passed through Congress. This is only $300 million. And so we, of course...
It's only $300 million. That's not enough. That's not enough war and bloodshed. Come on.
Hold on Congress to still pass that bill, and saying that this does not make up for that. He also said that it will pass if it's brought to the floor, if the Republicans allow it. Kieran.
All right, Patrick Reval, thanks so much for the late breaking news there. We appreciate
it. It made so much sense, and you delivered it as if you were working for the government. So great job. So that happened. I don't even know anymore. Also, what happened that we missed, that we didn't talk about because it didn't happen yet? The Oscars have happened, and I'm not happy with that either. I'm not happy with a lot right now. It is what it is. Let's look at the full list of winners, shall we? Because I'm not gonna... Well, maybe. No, don't want to play that. I've never seen a minute, not 1 second, of this show. You know what? Let's watch this moment. Because it came up. It's 3 minutes. John Cena in the buff, Emma Stone's dress, and Ryan Gosling as Ken. video highlights. Let's see the highlights of the Oscars, or listen to them, rather, from The Guardian. Unbelievable. It's not playing. It's not playing. Maybe I can find it on the internet. The Guardian, Oscars. Surely they put it on YouTube. I would hope. All right, here it is. Never trust the website.
Oppenheimer.
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 I see Oppenheimer.
I could deny it, but I have been dreaming about this moment for so long.
Christopher Nolan Oppenheimer.
So has Japan.
Movies are just a little bit over 100 years old. I mean, imagine being there 100 years into painting or theater. We don't know where this incredible journey is going from here, but to know that you think that I'm a meaningful part of it means the world to me.
Cillian Murphy.
We made a film about the man who created the atomic bomb, and for better or for worse, we're all living in Oppenheimer's world, so I would really like to dedicate this to the peacemakers everywhere.
That wasn't that man. He was not a peacemaker. He made a bomb.
Robert Downey Jr.
I'd like to thank my terrible childhood and the Academy in that order.
Oscar goes to Billie Eilish and Phineas.
To the Academy, I feel like I just didn't think this would happen. I was not expecting this.
It doesn't seem to matter what I do. Always the number two.
Yes, Emma Stone won the Oscar, just like I said she would, because she showed everything in Poor Things. Poor Things. Poor Things. I can't say enough about how much I did not enjoy that film in terms of the writing and the writing and the writing. But the acting was fine, it's fine. And the directing was fine, I guess. We've just been there so many times before. So unoriginal, so uninteresting. And it could have been interesting because it was based on a certain story that was quite different than what was in the film. So wasn't impressed with it. Already gave my review. Stand by it 100%. Totally knew she was going to win the Oscar. Did not want to give her the SAG Award. I already told you that. If you heard that episode, not many did. Hope you did. Check out the SAG Award episode if you care about the awards. If you don't, you can still check it out because I take shots at things, so it's fun. But if not, you know, it's fine. You can just listen to my political shit and whatnot. I don't care. But anyway, just listen to me, please. Thank you. Let's listen to her get her award because it's so special. Such a big moment, even though she already won one before for showing her snatch. I don't know if she showed her snatch. I can't remember. But she definitely showed her boobs in the last one.
My dress is broken. I think it happened during I'm Just Ken. I'm pretty sure.
Davine.
For so long, I've always wanted to be different. And now I realize I just need to be myself. And I thank you. I thank you for seeing me.
Has there ever been a worse host than Jimmy Kimmel at the Oscars? His opening was that of a less than average person trying too hard to be something which he is not and never can be. Get rid of Kimmel and perhaps replace him with another washed up but cheap ABC talent, George Sloppenopoulos. He would make everybody on stage look bigger, stronger, and more glamorous. Blah, blah, blah. Make America great again. Thank you for watching. I'm surprised you're still watching. Isn't it past your jail time?
I guess I had to end on that note. But anyway, so that happened, and a bunch of celebrities got awards for, you know, various things from the institution that was created out of a quite controversial figure named Louis B. Mayer, who created the whole idea of the Academy Awards just so that he could get back at unions. So that's fun. Anyway, list of winners was mostly Oppenheimer, which was infuriating for me, having watched it and being so... The thing was about it, like, there are people who say, oh my goodness, Oppenheimer, you know, it's talking about the problems with what he did and everything. It's looking at it's worse than all and that sort of thing. Like, it's not, though. It's pretty propaganda-y from beginning to end. And you don't come away feeling good or bad about what he did, but you do know that what he did happened. And that's really all it is. It's like, it happened. It was made to happen. It was supposed to be about stopping the Nazis, and then it wasn't. It clearly wasn't in the end. And now the US gets to look at Russia and China and be like, don't you do anything, when they've done the horrible thing that they are railing at them about. So it doesn't make sense, but yeah. And it sucks because I do usually enjoy Christopher Nolan's work, so it was sad to see him go that way, and I knew it was coming. In fact, I can recall, oh my gosh, I forgot. I got an availability check for a background role in the film. And you know what? We need money, you know what I mean? We gotta pay rent. We have to do things. I don't blame the actors for being in the movie either, but I was supposed to maybe get a fitting, and then that didn't end up happening, and I didn't end up in the movie. I was kind of happy, because I looked at what it was about, and I was like, I don't want to be a part of that. So, it was good in the long run. And again, I will say, no mention at all of the Rockefeller Foundation, which was instrumental in making it happen. So, there you go. Then there was also a little bit of war propaganda from 20 Days in Mariupol winning the Best Documentary Feature Film, continuing the tradition of propaganda films, war propaganda films, winning Oscars after the White Helmets disaster. And so, yeah, that's basically the Oscars for you. And it was sad. And I have now watched 3 minutes of it. And probably not going to watch much more. Maybe I'll watch I'm Just Kidding, because I did enjoy that film. I enjoyed that music video, basically. I enjoyed the performance. It was fun. It was light. I liked it. I liked Ken. Ken was cool. And then we come to more news. There's a trial that just ended. You may have heard of it. May have not. I'll tell you about it. Maybe I'll go back to my accent for that. It was in New Mexico. And, it was concerning this armorer on the set of Rust. We went over this before. Alec Baldwin accidentally shot the cinematographer, Helena Hutchins, on set of Rust. And then the Rust film eventually somehow came back together, and don't know how. And the armorer was on trial. So her trial is before Alex's trial. So she didn't plea or anything, I guess. So she was looking at 18 months. And she just had one of the worst cases I've ever seen. Because not only was her case just shit, but she testified basically on camera to a police officer, which was used against her, of course, in court. And it was basically her admitting failure, sucking so bad, and basically, like, ruining every chance that she had a career. And basically focused on that after the shooting and talking to the police about that in a bathroom of all sorts, like, of all things. Like, that was so weird. Where she was just opening up way too much. Didn't have a lawyer. And was saying all kinds of incriminating stuff that, you know, she messed up. She admitted, basically, she's sorry, you know, she didn't mean to do it and all this stuff. And that she was, she learned from the best, her father, and she's ruined it, basically. I will play that clip, oh my gosh. Why listen to me when you can hear it for yourself? Oh my dear. Okay, let me do another one. All right, I'll get that right for you quickly. It's a pretty quick clip. Her name is Hannah Gutierrez. I forgot her last name for a second. Reed. Oh my gosh, do you not know who I'm looking at? Okay. All right, and then I'll say, TMZ, whatever, it's fine. Okay, here it is. Here's the incriminating evidence that she submitted.
Okay, what is your full name?
Hannah. H-A-N-N-A-H. Gutierrez.
How do you spell your last name?
G-U-T-I-E-R-R-E-Z.
What was that again?
G-U-T-I-E-R-R-E-Z.
What's your place of employment?
Here,
what's the name of the?
Rust.
Is it like a video production or?
Yeah, it's Rust Productions LLC.
What's your job there with them?
I'm the armor, or at least I was. Welcome to the worst day of my life. I can't believe Alec Baldwin was holding the gun. That's so fucked.
Is there, like, a closer cop car you guys can put me in or something? I mean, the closest one that I can put you in is one of the ones that's, like, the unmarked one. I just kind of wish that any of my coworkers could stop seeing me because I already feel super bad. Okay, yeah. I just want to get the fuck out of here and never show my face in this industry ever. Well, I wouldn't say that. Oh, I wouldn't. I'm, like, the only female armorer in the game and I just fucked up my whole entire career. Have you studied armory, or did you go to classes, or how did you get into it? My dad's the best, one of the best armors in the entire world, and he trained me, and I'm a fucking failure.
Oh, there you go. And you wonder why you didn't win. So, then that cuts to, we'll cut to the verdict. Let's get to the verdict.
And a live look now inside that courtroom for the Rust trial. Remember, for the movie's Armorer, we know that jurors have a verdict in the Rust shooting trial. I'm going to ask my control room if this is a live look. I believe that it is. And this is live. This is live. So this is obviously 607 out east. It's a couple hours earlier there in New Mexico. You are looking at Hannah Gutierrez Reed. Again, a live look here in court as she is preparing to hear the verdict in the case, 407 there in Santa Fe, in the case against her. Prosecutors in closing arguments have told the jury that when Gutierrez Reed wasn't doing her job, filming was like a game of Russian roulette every time an actor had a gun. You see them standing. I want to see if we have audio at all to be able to listen into this verdict. We do not have audio, but we do have a producer in court. Our Dana Griffin, I believe, is in court as well. I hear some of the background noise here. They may have just turned the microphones on. So we're going to listen in here. Now, remember what she faces, right? This is an issue where she is accused. She has loaded the gun that went off in the hand of Alec Baldwin back in October of 2021. That led to the death of the movie cinematographer Helena Hutchins. It is now up to the jury to decide if she is guilty or not of involuntary manslaughter and tampering with evidence. We do have audio now. I want to listen in as the jury is about to read out its verdict here in this case.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, through the foreperson, have you reached a verdict?
Yes.
All right, let me see the verdict.
I'm going to skip.
Okay. I would start with count one. Okay. Will the defendant please stand?
We find the defendant, Hannah Gutierrez, guilty of involuntary manslaughter as charged in count one. We find the defendant, Hannah Gutierrez, not guilty of tampering with evidence as charged in count two.
All right, thank you. You may be seated. Let me get those forms, retrieve those forms from you. I'm going to do what's called polling the jury. What I need to put on the record is that this is your individual verdict, okay? So I'm going to start with the gentleman in the back. Is this your verdict?
Yes.
Ma'am, is this your verdict?
Hannah Gutierrez Reed there, the armorer on the set of the movie Rust.
Okay, we don't need her, you know, chime in. Let's get back to it.
Not the other. Help us understand that.
Okay, I'm going to go to one without her, without somebody talking. Let me go to verdict here. Beep, beep, boop, doop. So I watched a lot of this trial on Court TV, which is oddly enough not coming up. Weird. But let's see. I guess we'll go to Law and Crime. That's probably the best bet we have. And then I'll skip to it. It happened really quickly.
Not guilty of tampering with evidence. It's charged count two.
All right, thank you. You may be seated. Let me get those forms, retrieve those forms from you. I'm going to do what's called polling the jury. What I need to put on the record is that this is your individual verdict, okay? So I'm going to start with the gentleman in the back. Is this your verdict?
Yes.
Ma'am, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Sir, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Sir, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Sir, is this your verdict?
Yes, Your Honor.
Sir, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Sir, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Ma'am, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Ma'am, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Ma'am, is this your verdict? Ma'am, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Ma'am, is this your verdict? Okay, thank you. All right, so you've completed your service. Thank you so much for being here. It was a long trial. People may want to talk to you. You know, this has been pretty much a lot of publicity. And you don't have to, okay? So you can just simply say, do not wish to talk and move on. And if anybody bothers you, we've really tried to protect your privacy. If anybody bothers you, simply call my division and we'll figure out what to do. But you also may talk, okay? So it's entirely up to you, okay? All right, so you can escort them out?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you.
All rise.
George.
Appeal.
And so, okay, then she was remanded into custody, according, well, the prosecutor, the special prosecutor, who is going to also be in the next trial, Rust, with Alec Baldwin, the big, big, big one. She asked for her to be remanded into custody, and that's what happened, and then she did, and then Gutierrez Reed had her picture taken, her mugshot. And that's where she went. So some people were surprised about that because she hadn't had any priors or anything. But it's just what the judge said. I don't want to get into it because I can just wrap it up. Because I watched the whole goddamn thing. But the judge said, you know, that it was a death case. If it weren't a death case, maybe they wouldn't put her in jail or prison or whatever. Jail? I don't know. Jail for sentencing. Right. So they put her in jail. In New Mexico, so Santa Fe, New Mexico, and then the sentencing hearing is going to be in April, so that's next month. So we'll see what happens there, but in the meantime, we also have some news coming out of the Alec Baldwin case, which I wanted to get to as well, if I can find that information. Where did I see that? I don't want to lose any of my pages here. Let me find it. There we go. All right.
Welcome back to Court TV Live. I'm Ashley Wilcott. Before we get you back into court in Idaho.
Okay, so this is Alec Baldwin accuses prosecutors of misconduct. Rust shooting update. This is from one day ago, so it's pretty recent.
We have a quick update on the Rust movie shooting trial for Alec Baldwin. Defense attorneys for the actor urged a New Mexico judge on Thursday to dismiss a grand jury indictment on the grounds that, number one, the state violated the rules governing the grand jury process. Another grounds that the state improperly instructed the grand jury that Baldwin had a duty to check the gun and to refrain from pointing it at anyone. Also, that the prosecutor improperly disclosed confidential grand jury information, and further, that the prosecutor only presented evidence to the grand jury that was favorable to her case. The January indictment charged Baldwin with involuntary manslaughter in the death of cinematographer Helena Hutchins on the set of the Western movie Rust back in October of 2021. The film's armorer, Hannah Gutierrez, was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter just earlier this month for her role in the fatal shooting. And during her trial, both the state and the defense made mention of Baldwin and his involvement in the shooting.
Alec Baldwin pointed a gun on that set, and he either had his finger on the trigger and the hammer cocked, or he pulled the trigger as he was pointing that at Ms. Hutchins and Mr. Souza, who was right behind her. And make no mistake, this is not a prop gun. This is a real gun. Mr. Baldwin pointed it right at him, either had his finger on the trigger and depressed, or pulled it, causing that gun to fire and hit Ms. Hutchins.
Okay. I'm going to wait for the airplane. I don't think that's an airplane. That's a fucking helicopter. There must be shenanigans afoot. It's like they don't even know that I'm recording right now. So rude. How dare they? The Oscars already happened. Go away. Okay. Alright, I'm gonna try to get back to it.
That's the first thing that had to happen. Ms. Gutierrez Reed, you're not gonna hear anything about her being in that church or firing that weapon. That was Alec Baldwin.
That was Alec Baldwin. Let's get to the prosecutor.
Defense. Alec Baldwin is to blame for acting like a prima donna on the movie set and bossing people around. This is Hollywood, for heaven's sakes. I would imagine that's relatively common. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that his conduct was right. I am the person who indicted him. Alec Baldwin's conduct and his lack of gun safety inside that church on that day is something that he's going to have to answer for. Not with you, and not today. That'll be with another jury on another day.
That was a big moment. That was a big moment, I gotta say. That was interesting. Here's another one. Now we're getting a witness list, according to this KOB4 television station. Let's see what they say.
Actor Alec Baldwin is supposed to go on trial in our state this summer in the deadly Rust movie shooting, and now we know who could testify. Spencer Schott covered the first Rust trial just last week against Armour. Hannah Gutierrez, Reed, and Spencer. We got a look for the first time today at the witness list for Baldwin's trial, and there are quite a few familiar names on it.
Yeah, Tessa, looking through this list, there's a lot of, like you said, familiar names because we already heard a lot of these witnesses already testify in that first case. So the first 15 or so witnesses the state is calling for the Baldwin trial are the same ones they called for Gutierrez Reed's trial, from responding officers to FBI investigators, and of course, people who were working on the set of Rust when Helena Hutchins was shot and killed. But one major difference is that the state has listed Hannah Gutierrez Reed as a possible witness.
Now, we did not hear from Gutierrez Reed during her trial. Do we expect she's actually going to testify against Baldwin?
I had the same question, so I reached out to her attorney, Jason Bowles, and he said this in a statement saying, Gutierrez Reed has not been subpoenaed, but we will, of course, comply with any subpoena. So yeah. I also asked him if he thinks her testifying against Baldwin would have any impact on any appeals they plan on filing in the future. He says he doesn't think so.
Okay, well, we're going to take a look at the defense list, who Baldwin's attorneys plan to call to boost up his case. What's that look like?
Very different from the state's list. The state had more than 32 witnesses. The defense has only one name on their list right now, and that's Assistant Director David Halls. He took a plea deal in this case and got 6 months probation, and he was a state witness in the Gutierrez Reed trial.
Fuck Dave Halls, by the way.
But while he took the stand, it was quickly apparent he was frustrating the producers, or the prosecutors, by testifying he thought that the set of Rust was safe, despite all the OSHA fines and the multiple cameramen walking off set in protest the day of the shooting.
Did you feel, personally...
I don't want to see him again. I'm going to skip. He's annoying. Oh, this guy is annoying. I didn't like him from the beginning. Because when I first heard about the Rust event that happened with Alec, I knew that, like, if you're looking at the chain of custody and everything, David Halls was very much responsible for a lot of what occurred. Dave Halls was responsible. Also, Hannah Gutierrez Reed. Also, obviously, Alec Baldwin, who not only was holding the gun, but also got trigger happy and also was in charge of the set, was a producer, a big producer, like one of the names involved in the company. So that's a no-brainer for me. Seth also, to an extent, if you look at the Seth Kenny guy who was also bringing rounds allegedly from the set of 1883 with Thel Reed, who is the father or stepfather of Hannah Gutierrez Reed. That was all very shady as well. There's a lot of shadiness with him. And also Sarah, who was the props department master, who was supposed to be in charge of Gutierrez Reed, who was also a props person. So she was props and armor. But obviously an armor on that day. So did not do her job very well. So that's really what I thought of that specific case.
Expand their witness list, add anyone else to it, but they did not get back to me today. Baldwin, though, is facing involuntary manslaughter charges. Those are the same charges that a jury convicted Hannah Gutierrez Reed of just last week.
trial's supposed to start in a little less than 4 months. It'll be here before we know it, though. Spencer, thanks.
Yep.
Actor.
Yeah, it's gonna be. It said July, so we'll see how that goes. So yeah, that's just like a law update, like a trial that I was looking at because it's entertainment related and that is my industry, you know. So, we got some interesting biometric updates here. I'm looking at. We haven't had one of these in a while, so I thought I'd do one of them at the end of the show. Yes, we are ending very soon. Do not worry, but you'll get more of me next month. On time, probably, at the right time. So this will be an early episode, and then the next one will do as usual. Oh my gosh, let me find something really... There was something with Ukraine up there. Maybe we'll do the Ukraine one. Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, this is great. This is great news. Wonderful news. Oh my gosh, so good. March 15, 2024. By Ayang McDonald. Nigeria, Rwanda use digital ID for social welfare payments. What's the worst that could happen? So Nigeria's President Bola Tinubu recently directed officials to use the national digital ID system to enable the accurate identification of beneficiaries of for government to people welfare payment program in the country. The scheme is relaunching. I love when they call it a scheme because that's exactly what it always is. Is relaunching after being halted for a while after reported incidents of fraud, and it aims to reach 12 million households. Across the continent in Rwanda, the government early this month also rolled out a similar social welfare program dubbed the Imibereho Dynamic Social Registry System. Sounds fun. Which will be based on a new digital ID database. It is part of a project to take almost 1 million Rwandans out of poverty. But, you know, at a price. Meanwhile, the Cybersecurity Capacity Development and Financial Inclusion, or CyberFi, project run by the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. They're good people. Mm-hmm. A development think tank has pinpointed the importance of establishing trust in digital financial services as a way of driving up financial inclusion in Africa. They just love fucking with Africa, don't they? Damn. Findings of the project that involved some countries in West, Central, East, and Southern Africa offer insights and recommendations on how relevant stakeholders can broaden the inclusive nature of digital financial services, while unraveling some of the major threats to digital financial ecosystems in Africa at different levels. The research also suggests how they can be overcome. Then it says 60 million Nigerians to get social benefits using digital ID. As reported by leadership, Finance Minister Wale Edun, speaking after a recent Federal Executive Council meeting, said the president directed that the welfare payments be restarted, but in a manner that ensures beneficiaries are actually who they claim to be. Edun said the 12 million households targeted represent about 60 million vulnerable Nigerians, and the president has insisted that every beneficiary will be identified by their national ID number and bank verification number. The program, which was launched last year, was halted partly due to the fraud that plagued it, but the finance minister says requiring the NIN and BVN from beneficiaries henceforth will address the problem. No problem. In the past weeks, Nigeria has been facing a cost of living crisis with a number of street protests staged across some cities of the country. And it also disclosed that, cognizant of this, the government is also envisaging envisaging a social welfare program that will strengthen the purchasing power of Nigerian youth. Problem reaction solution. The cash payments program in Nigeria is part of President Tinubu's buffer measures to assuage the effect of a fuel subsidy removal last year. Again, problem reaction solution. Rwanda opens new registry to manage social payments. The identities of an estimated 975,680 poor Rwandans will be managed from a new social register that will enable the government to implement, because it's not there, a poverty alleviation scheme. Per New Times, the new social registry that will contain vital information on the socioeconomic status of poor households that will not be used in any way, shape, or form, was launched by the local government ministry at the end of February. The new system, which is a replacement for another known as, Budehe categorization, will run thanks to a collaboration with various government agencies, including the Land Registry, the Rwanda Information Society Authority, the National Identification Agency, and the Rwanda Revenue Authority. The outlet cites local government minister Jean-Claude Musabiyama. Musabiyama as saying that already the details of about 3 million citizens have been recorded in the new registry. Musabiyama says data collected in the system will improve our planning for development and welfare of the residents. The new system is also expected to tackle corruption in the social protection sector. Rwanda's ICT minister announced last October that biometric enrollment for the country's national ID, digital ID program was imminent. Wow. So there's that. And then here's the Ukrainian one. I guess we'll end on Ukraine. We'll bring it back to Ukraine. We'll do that. March 15th, 2024, Masha Barak wrote, Ukrainian and digital ID app DIIA goes open source. Yes, love that for us. Ukraine wants to make it easier for other countries to build up their digital identity ecosystems and to help them find inspiration. It is making its own e-government application DIIA open source. Since its launch in 2019, the DIA project has been attracting interest in places such as Estonia, already part of the digital ID ecosystem, and the UK. Making the application open source could help the Ukrainian government quickly export it to other countries. Ukrainian digital transformation. Wow. That's a thing. Minister Mikhailo, whatever the fuck your name is, Fedorov said in an announcement on Telegram, the whole world is focusing on open source products. The main advantage is that any developer from anywhere in the world will be able to study the documentation and start developing their additional source services or microservices that will fit the application, says Fedorov. Opening up the source code of the DIA app will also allow the IT community to suggest changes and improvements. The registers and the encryption features of the app will remain closed off, he adds. The world's top products are based on open source. For example, the Estonian application X-Road. On its basis, we have built the Trimbita system, which is responsible for the rapid exchange of data between registries, says Fedorov. DIA currently boasts over 21.7 million users who can access over 70 government services, according to tech-focused publication AIN.Capital. But while Ukraine remains an inspiration for countries looking to introduce digital identity and digital public infrastructure, some aspects of DIA may not be transferable to other environments. Australia's Ambassador of Ukraine to Australia, Vasil Miroshenko, why can't I say it? Miroshenko, there, I got it finally, explained during an event in October. When Russia invaded Ukraine, the app's back-end systems were migrated to data centers outside the country to protect them. The country was also aided by the fact that much of its critical civilian infrastructure remains on legacy platforms. If you attack it, it's very easy to get back. You just reload it and it works again. So in a way, we were a bit more resilient just because of the older technology, Miroshenchenko says. The use of open source code in digital identity has gained prominence in part due to the efforts of the modular open source identification platform. Yikes. So there's some fun facts of what we're looking at in this dystopia. And I think we have 13 sources. So that's fun. I love that for us. I'm going to end here. I thank you so much for listening. Check out the YouTube channel for more information for more videos, you know, content, stuff like that to do with the show. And also subscribe if you would like. If you don't, whatever. Please listen to the podcast and share it. And there are live streams there that I do every once in a while. My last video was about the Oscars, or the beginning of the Oscars. It was Oscars Day, and showed how many the roads that were closed off and how that affected the residents in the area. So that was fun. It was a little walkabout that I took. But yeah, I'm just going to continue to give you things and hopefully you'll consume them. I don't know. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to help the world as much as I can in various ways. And some of that is by showing the artifice of the world as it is, for what it is. And I hope you'll join me on that journey continuously. And thank you for listening to my beautiful accent that I worked so hard on and does not come naturally at all to me. Yeah, I'm looking forward to going to the UK and also Europe, specifically Paris and Rome for the first time. So hopefully, probably the last because of the ETIAS. I've talked about it before, but they're going to implement that very intrusive program very soon. I'm just going to keep minding my own business and staying out of every selection that I can, because no one, 2024. Yes, that's what I say. Yeah, thanks for joining. Check out the X-Files series if you have not seen my super awkward review of the X-Files. It is very extensive. There's a playlist on YouTube, so please check that out. I'm L. Latham on there, aka L. Latham. I think that's still where I'm at, what I am on that channel. So yeah, like, keep on keeping on, I guess. And I'm going to keep enjoying these old Saturday night episodes because they're enjoyable. And I'm kind of learning more about what happened in history from that, because I was not alive or a zygote yet. So that is very interesting. And it will be interesting to see the saga of Andy Kaufman, which I've always wanted to see, so that's going to be fun. Yeah, I'm hopeful that things will be set right eventually, because they kind of have to. This is all it's in a cycle. We're in a cycle. It'll keep going and going. And this plane thing will keep going. Like, all this news shit will keep going, until another thing comes in, and then another thing, and then we go back to this thing, and back to that thing, and it'll be shooting season, school shooting season pretty soon, again, so that's something that always happens, and we'll see it happen again, but yeah, thanks for listening, and I really appreciate you, and I love you. No, I really do, though. You can count on me to express empathy. And I hope that you do the same. I thought that I would rhyme something there, but I did not. So I'm just going to end this. Thank you very much. Cheerio. See you next time. Hopefully. Bye.